The Hitchhiker. I had a new car. It was an exciting toy, a big BMW. It had a maximum speed of 210 kilometres per hour and marvellous acceleration. It was light blue. The seats were dark blue and they were made of good soft leather. The car had electric windows and a great stereo. The engine was impatient at slow speeds, but at 100 kilometres an hour, it made a noise like a cat purring. I was driving to London alone. It was a sunny day in June. I was driving at 100 kilometres per hour, relaxed and comfortable in my seat. Then I saw a man by the road with his thumb out. He was hitchhiking. I stopped next to him. I always stopped for hitchhikers. When I was young and did not have a car, I hitchhiked. I hated the drivers who didn't stop, especially people in big cars with three empty seats. It was always people with small cars that offered you a lift. The hitchhiker put his head through the open window and said, "Are you going to London, sir?" "Yes," I said. "Get in." He got in and I drove on. He was a small man with grey teeth. His eyes were dark and quick and intelligent, like a rat's eyes. He had a cap on his head and he was wearing a grey jacket with enormous pockets. He looked like a big human rat with his grey jacket and his quick eyes. "What part of London are you going to?" I asked him. "I'm going to the other side of London," he said. "I'm going to Epsom for the horse races. It's Derby Day today." "Oh, yes," I said. "I love betting on horses." "I never bet on horses," he said. "And I don't watch the races. They're stupid." "Then why do you go?" I asked. He didn't like that question. He looked at the road, saying nothing. I decided not to ask him any more questions. When I was young and I hitchhiked, drivers asked me a lot of questions. "Where are you going? Why are you going there? What's your job? Are you married? Do you have a girlfriend? What's her name? How old are you?" I hated all the questions. "I'm sorry," I said. "It's none of my business. You see, I'm a writer, and most writers are terribly curious." "Do you write books?" he asked. "Yes." "Writing books is okay," he said. "That's what I call a skilled profession." "I'm in a skilled profession too. I hate people who spend all their lives doing routine jobs with no skill in them. Do you see what I mean?" "Yes." "The secret of life," he said, "is to be very, very good at something that's very difficult to do, like you and me." "Why do you think that I'm good at my job?" I asked. "There are a lot of bad writers." "Bad writers don't have expensive cars," he answered. "I'm sure it costs a lot of money, this little car." It wasn't cheap. "What's the maximum speed?" he asked. 210 kilometres an hour," I said. "I bet the car can't do that." "I bet it can," I replied. "Prove it then," he said. "Go on, sir. Let's see how fast it can go." The motorway in front of us was long and straight. I pressed my foot on the accelerator. The big car jumped forward and began to go faster and faster. 150 kilometres an hour already," cried my passenger about 10 seconds later. I pressed the accelerator against the floor and kept it there. 160, he shouted. 170, 180, 190. Beautiful. Go on, go on. We passed several cars. We were going so fast that they seemed not to be moving. 200, my passenger shouted. Go on, go on. At that moment, I heard the scream of a police siren. It was very loud. A policeman on a motorcycle appeared next to us. He went past us and raised a hand, telling us to stop. He was probably doing 215 kilometres an hour when he passed us, and he took a long time to stop. Finally, he stopped at the side of the road, and I parked behind him. The policeman got off his motorcycle and placed his gloves carefully on the seat. He wasn't in a hurry now. He wanted to make us wait until he was ready. "This is real trouble," I said. "I don't like it at all." "Don't talk to him more than is necessary," my companion said. The policeman walked slowly towards us, like a killer approaching his victim. He was a big, fat man with a red face. We sat there like naughty schoolboys and waited for him to arrive. The policeman walked to my open window and placed a fat hand on the door.
"What's the hurry?" he said.
"I'm not in a hurry," I answered.
"Perhaps there's a woman in the back, and you're taking her to hospital to have a baby, is that it?"
"No, officer."
"Or perhaps your house is on fire, and you're going home to rescue your family."
His voice was soft and sarcastic. "My house isn't on fire, officer."
"In that case," he said, "you're in trouble, aren't you? Do you know what the speed limit is in this country?"
110 kilometres per hour, I said.
"And can you tell me exactly what your speed was just now?"
I didn't say anything. When he spoke next, his voice was so loud that I jumped.
200 kilometres an hour, he shouted. "That's 90 kilometres over the limit."
Then he looked at my passenger.
"And who are you?"
he asked in a severe voice. "He's a hitchhiker," I said. "I'm giving him a lift."
"I didn't ask you," he said. "I asked him. Give me your driving licence," he said,
and held his hand towards me. I gave him my driving licence. Carefully, he copied the name and address from my licence into his book of tickets. He read the licence plate on the front of the car and wrote that down as well. He wrote in the date, the time, and the other details. He checked that all the information appeared clearly on his copy. Then he took the top copy of the ticket from the book and gave it to me.
"Now you," he said to my passenger.
He went to the other side of the car and took a small black notebook from his pocket.
"What is your name and address?" "Michael Fish, 14 Windsor Lane, Luton," my passenger said. "Show me something to prove that is your real name and address," the policeman said.
My passenger gave the policeman his own driving licence. The policeman checked the name and address and gave it back to him.
"What's your job?"
he asked rudely.
"I'm a hod carrier."
"What?"
"I'm the person who carries the cement up the ladder to the bricklayer."
"I..." "All right, all right. Who's your employer?"
"I don't have one. I'm unemployed."
The policeman wrote all this in the black notebook.
"When I get back to the station, I'm going to check everything you say," he said to my passenger. "Me? What did I do wrong?"
the rat-faced man asked.
"I don't like your face, that's all," the policeman said. "And perhaps we have a picture of it somewhere in our records in the police station."
He returned to the window on my side of the car.
"I suppose you know you're in serious trouble," he said to me. "It will be a very long time before you drive this big car of yours again. In fact, it will be several years before you drive any car again. And that's good. I hope they send you to prison as well."
"Prison," I said.
"Absolutely," he said with a horrible smile. "With all the other criminals who break the law. And I hope you have to pay a lot of money too. I'll see you in court. Both of you."
He turned away and walked to his motorcycle. He started the engine and left at full speed.
"What are you going to do now?" asked my passenger.
"I'm going to London to talk to my lawyer," I said.
"Don't worry. You won't go to prison," my passenger said. "They don't put people in prison only for speeding. They can take your licence from you and they can make you pay a lot of money, but that's all."
I felt better. "By the way," I said, "why did you lie to him?"
"How do you know that I lied?" he asked.
"You told him that you carried cement, but you told me you were in a very skilled profession."
"I am," he said. "But it isn't intelligent to tell a policeman everything."
"So what do you do?" I asked him.
"Ah," he said mysteriously. "You want to know, don't you? Is it something you're ashamed of?" "Ashamed?" he cried. "I'm not ashamed of my job. I'm very proud of it."
"Then why won't you tell me what it is?"
"You are very curious, aren't you?" he said. "I don't think you will be happy until you discover exactly what the answer is." "I don't care what you do,"
I lied.
He looked at me out of the sides of his eyes.
I think you do care, he said. You think I'm in a very peculiar profession, and you want to know what it is.
I didn't like the way he read my thoughts. I kept quiet and looked at the road in front of me.
And you're correct, he continued. I am in a very peculiar profession. That's why I'm very careful who I talk to. How do I know, for example, that you're not another policeman who's not wearing a uniform?
Do I look like a policeman?
No, he said, you don't. And you aren't a policeman. An idiot can see that.
He took a tin of tobacco and a packet of cigarette papers from his pocket and started to make a cigarette. He did this difficult operation at incredible speed. The cigarette was ready in about 5 seconds. Then, from nowhere, a lighter appeared in his hand. He lit the cigarette. The lighter disappeared. It was like magic.
That was incredibly fast, I said.
Ah, he said, so you saw. He sat back and smiled. He was very happy that I saw how quickly he could make a cigarette.
Do you know how I did that?
He asked.
It's because I've got fantastic fingers. These fingers are faster than the fingers of the best piano player in the world.
Are you a piano player?
Don't be stupid, he said. Do I look like a piano player?
I looked at his fingers. They were so long and elegant. They were different to the rest of him. They looked like the fingers of a brain surgeon.
My job, he went on, is 100 times more difficult than playing the piano. Any idiot can learn to do that, but only 1 person in 10 million can learn to do what I do. 1 person in 10 million! What do you think of that?
Incredible, I said, but I think I know what you do. You're a magician. You do magic tricks.
No, I'm not a magician. I don't do tricks.
Then you're a card player.
Certainly not, he cried.
All right, I don't know, tell me. Suddenly, my passenger held his hand towards me. There was a black belt in his hand.
Do you recognise this belt? He asked.
The belt was unusual.
Hey, I said, that's my belt. Where did you get it? Where do you think I got it? He said, smiling. From your trousers, of course.
I put my hand on my trousers and I tried to find my belt. It wasn't there.
You mean you took it from my trousers? I asked. But that's impossible. I didn't see you do it. I didn't feel you do it. And what about this? He exclaimed, holding a brown shoelace in his fingers.
I looked at my shoes. I only had one lace.
Good heavens, I said. How did you do that? I didn't see you bend down. You didn't see anything, he said proudly. You didn't see me move. And do you know why? Yes, I said. Because you've got fantastic fingers. Correct, he cried.
He sat and smoked his cigarette. He knew that I was impressed, and this made him very happy.
I don't want to be late, he said. What time is it?
I tried to look at my watch. It wasn't there. I looked at the man. He smiled at me.
You took that too, I said.
He opened his hand and there was my watch.
It's a nice watch, he said. Superior quality. It's gold. It's easy to sell too.
Give it to me, please, I said. I was quite angry. He gave me the watch.
I'm not stealing from you, sir, he said. You're my friend. You're giving me a lift. I'm simply answering your questions.
Have you got any more of my things? He smiled again, and he took several of my things from his pocket. My driving licence, a key ring with 4 keys on it, some money, a letter, my diary, an old pencil, and a cigarette lighter.
So you're a pickpocket, I said. I don't like that word, he answered. It's a vulgar word. Pickpockets are vulgar people who only do amateur jobs. They take money from blind old ladies. I'm a fingersmith. I'm a professional fingersmith.
He looked very proud as he spoke.
I don't know that word, I said. Did you invent it? "Of course I didn't invent it," he replied. "You know what a goldsmith is, don't you? A goldsmith is an expert with gold, and a silversmith is an expert with silver. I'm an expert with my fingers, so I'm a fingersmith."
"I'm sure it's an interesting job," I said.
"It's a wonderful job," he answered. "It's lovely."
"And that's why you go to the horse races?"
"Yes," he said. "After the race, I watch the winners come to collect their money. Then I follow them and take it from them. It's easy. But I never take anything from a loser. And I don't take anything from poor people. I only take from the winners and the rich."
"That's very considerate," I said. "How often do the police catch you?"
"Catch me?" he cried, disgusted. "Catch me? The police only catch pickpockets. They never catch fingersmiths. I can take the false teeth out of your mouth if I want to, and you won't catch me." "I don't have false teeth," I said. "I know you don't," he answered. I checked.
We drove for some time without talking. "That policeman's going to check what you said very carefully," I said. "Aren't you worried?"
"Nobody will check what I said," he replied.
"Of course they will. He wrote your name and address very carefully in his black book." The man gave me another of his smiles.
"Ah," he said. "But he doesn't have your name and address in his memory as well. I don't know any policeman with good memories."
"What has memory got to do with it?" I asked.
"He wrote it in his book, didn't he?"
"Yes, sir, he did. But the trouble is, he lost the book. He lost both books, the one with my name in it and the one with yours."
He showed me the two books. He held them in the long, delicate fingers of his right hand.
"I took them from the policeman's pockets. It was a very easy job," he said triumphantly. "That policeman can prove nothing now."
I was so excited that I nearly hit a lorry.
"You're a genius," I cried. "He has no names, no addresses, no car license plate, nothing," he said.
"You're phenomenal."
"Stop when you can," he said. "Then we can make a little fire and burn these books." "You're fantastic," I exclaimed.
"Thank you, sir," he said. "It's always nice to be appreciated."